But we have, through a website, tried to keep the family at large, meaning every generation, informed of what's going on at Van Hornsel. But that's been a center for us. And it will be interesting to see how this goes forward. I'm of the opinion right now that there needs to be an ongoing family clan newsletter that someone in the family handles. And that obviously would be from a website.
Okay. I also wanted to ask about the reunions that you remember when you were growing up. You talked mostly about the current ones, but when you were younger.
Well, it wasn't reunions so much. It was that my father had several siblings, and they all had houses in the village, and we had the old farm. And because many of them were involved in the educational world, they had that kind of holiday system. And those times would be spent up in Van Hornsel. So to go back to those Christmas ones, 10-day Christmas, New Year period, not only were we gathered together for the activities I was talking about, but my grandfather saw to it that we gathered most nights for dinner at his house in the village. And that made a tremendous difference, too, because we were all together, and there was singing and music and whatever else we were doing, games. So a reunion that was organized of the kind that we have now, every August, for instance, didn't have to happen then because the family had so many different places.
How do you feel about different members of your family living all around the country?
Well, let's look at my own immediate family. I have a daughter and son in Connecticut and another son out in Seattle. And he comes back with his family every August for this reunion time and spends about 2 weeks. I don't like the distance between the two coasts. It's a major effort to get back and forth for all of us. Major effort and expense. But I'm well aware times have changed, and most of the families I know are scattered all around the country, and this is just the way it is. And what I've seen happen, let's take my son out in the Seattle areas with his wife and the children, they have gotten to know and in a sense create a community, at least one if not more, with friends, fellow sailors for instance, or their friends from church. So what I've seen happen over these years is that if that family community isn't living close together, and I know in this area here, many families do have family members close together. If they don't have that, which has been my experience and my friends at large from elsewhere, then the younger people seem to have tried to create their own communities where they are, which I think is very good. But it means then when families come together, it has to be planned and there's major expense. A lot of my family are in California, family clan, the son in Seattle. That's, you know, two coasts, great distance.
But now more of them are at least getting summer homes back in Van Hornsel, so how do you feel about that?
Well, I'm very glad. Mm-hmm. And babies are arriving, and there's a need for more housing. So the country and getting away from a city or a suburban area is something the younger people are looking for.
Right. I also, moving a little bit away from that, I wanted to touch on your ministry work. And I wanted to ask about what made you decide to go back to school and study that.
Well, let's start with the school part. Throughout my life, I have really enjoyed learning. And that goes on to this day. I had, over the years, been heavily influenced by where I lived and some activities. Living across from the Washington Cathedral and going to the cathedral school through sixth grade had tremendous impact. Then when I was in college, I would go out with several other students to small churches throughout New England and run the church services and the potluck supper and whatever else happened between usually a Saturday morning and Sunday afternoon. There weren't any clergy people and ministers to serve those churches. So that was one of my other college activities. Then I didn't do anything particularly. When I was involved in the piano teaching, I was also involved in a local church with various activities. And I realized that I was very interested in theology and wanted to pursue a vocation in the ministry. So I started looking around at different schools. And I ended up going to Yale Divinity School, tried to continue the teaching at the same time, discovered I couldn't do that and be a student as well. The demands were too great, so I had to let the piano teaching go, and was at Yale Divinity School as a student for 3 years. I've always been interested in theology, in ideas, and much of my history focus in college was history of ideas, intellectual history. So while at Yale, I had a heavy program of theology and fulfilled all the other requirements of scripture courses and all of that. And along with it, because it was a heavily academic program in a university like that, there was the practical piece. We were required to have internships of one kind or another. I interned at a monastery on the Hudson River for a year because I was interested in running retreats and also very interested in spiritual formation. As I described, coming together of theology and scripture and the practical aspect of how one lives a life, meaning prayer activities and just how a person's centered to live his or her life. I stayed on at this monastery, Episcopal monastery of men, to work off and on part-time. Several times a year I was in there running elder hostel programs. And so I was tied up with working there about 8.5 years. And I carried that commitment of the elder hostel along with whatever else I was doing. So when I finished Yale, I didn't leave. I started to work there with spiritual formation with students and to get that program into place at the school, which they hadn't had it all. And it was a time period where there hadn't been any women on the Divinity School faculty. But the dean of students was a woman, and then two women came onto the faculty. So it's a very interesting time period with this shift. So I stayed on there and actually worked out of there one way or another for 23 years or so. This was particularly in the spiritual formation area, the history of spirituality. Did a lot with group work. And the goal was to try to combine the academic studies with a practical piece. I've often described it as similar to medical school education, where the academics are learned, but the medical student has to do the practical piece too. But that also includes the personal development of the student with prayer life, personal commitment, who he or she would be when they left in 3 years. So I liked the work. The students were interesting. I often was teaching students who were doing dual degrees with divinity in law or divinity in medicine. Sometimes CEOs from business companies would come for a year or 2 years there. So it was very interesting. Any other questions about that? I mean, I could talk a lot about all of that.
When you were at Yale, you were one of the few women on staff. What was that like?
Well, I'd already gone to Radcliffe, so I'd already had my college education, basically at a men's school at Harvard, even though Radcliffe was part of all of that. I had a couple professors there who didn't call the roll call for the women because they didn't want them in the class. So I use that example because when I found myself at Yale with this shift and the numbers of students in the school who were women were increasing, I had a background of the educational world where I had to some extent, fight my way through college. Instead of leaving to go someplace else where it might be friendlier, that there are times when it's important to stay in the midst of the fray. Just stay put and try to fight your way through it and make your presence known. And that's what happened. I mean, I was very heavily involved in the theology and spiritual formation part of the program at the school there, teaching with it, and these two women came on the faculty, and one was dean of students. And of course, it's been on the increase ever since. But another development during that time period and the years I was working there was inclusive language, which was a major challenge, where we had to shift from the language in the scripture that talked about he or him all the time, or men, to a word that would be inclusive. It didn't mean either male or female gender, it was in general. That wasn't easy, and to this day I still find it challenging sometimes. That I would go even to read a scripture passage at the school in those later years with a piece of paper that had the word that I was going to have to put, or multiple words, into what I was reading or speaking. That was a major change, but it was part of the same scene that you were just asking about. It wasn't just the presence of women, language was being changed.
And how did you feel, did this end up impacting other parts of your life or throughout your career?
A I'm not quite sure what you're asking.
I was wondering if you, as a woman with a career, when we talked earlier, you called yourself a bridge woman. And so I thought that meant bridging the gap between being a housewife and also having a career. So I wanted to know what that was like, not just at Divinity School, but throughout your life.
I was fortunate to grow up in a family that greatly respected women, and women having major interests in some of them developing careers. So it wasn't until I left my family, and I would say probably started in college that time, that I realized the difficulties out there for women. I've been sheltered and naive about that. So up to these days, I often will ask people, well, what was your family like? What did your mother do? Or what did your sisters do? Because it tells me a lot about people's attitudes to this day amongst particularly older people. And how much they've thought about the changes for women. How has it impacted it? Well, I've had to stand my ground and fight my way off and on over the years as a woman. But there have been a lot of supportive people along the way, and I think that the men who have been really supportive are ones I've worked with or have chosen to work with as teams at one time or another, as a twosome or a small group. So I've been fortunate that way. I think that I don't know quite what else to say about it. I say bridge woman, you brought that up, and I like that term, that the expectations back in my time in general for people I was with most of the time was that the women that went to college and then they got married, had children, and stayed home. Now, granted, there were many exceptions to that, and for me, I never intended that. I went to an all-girls school in New York City, couldn't wait to get out of that. And my mother and others wanted me to go to an all-girls college, and I said, no way, I've gotten myself into Radcliffe, I'm going there. So it was at that point in time that I made a decision to basically go to a men's college and fight my way. I actually thought we'd be more supported by Radcliffe. But I go back to reunions now and hear my classmates talk about some scandalous stories of lack of support for them. You know, one couple of them wanted to be scientists, so no, girls don't do that. So it's an example of the kind of thing we had to deal with. And in the church world, I did not choose the route of serving a church for multiple years. I stayed at Yale and worked with the theology and the spiritual formation and all of that. Went around and ran workshops on various topics elsewhere. But that was a different kind of ministry than the usual expectation on the part of people. But it worked out very well for me. But of course, traditionally men had been the clergy people. And over the years, I've had to counsel many women on how to manage that or difficult relationships and just stand their ground. So by bridge woman, we're talking about the expectation of my staying home and not doing much of anything, to my being fortunate to be ordained clergy and to have been a teacher of history and piano, and also trained as a pastoral counselor and administrator. So I have managed, and I'm very happy to be involved with music again, which is easier, more fun way to live my life at the moment.
How do you feel about the women's rights movement today and the progress it's made?
Well, I think it's made tremendous progress. And a number of years ago, to backtrack to when women started appearing at the Divinity School on the faculty and in the administration, I knew a lot of women that I would describe as very militant. They were just focused on, I want as many rights as I can get, do what I want to do, and I don't want to hear anything from anyone else that's negative about me or women. And I, as I also mentioned, did not think that was the way to go. But there were people like that. There still are. And I saw that played out various places, not just where I was at school working. Today, well, I think that many of the younger women have no idea what us older women had to go through. And I think often about, well, how do we tell the stories or tell them what we've gone through? Or how much of that do we really have to tell? These days, I see my daughter and also my granddaughter supported and free for the most part with what they do. But I still run into difficulties. Sometimes I will find myself with a group of men who are telling stories. I'll be one of two women, let's say, in that group of about six or eight. And there's a story I want to tell. This has happened several times. The men stop, look at me. I have no idea what they're thinking, but I'm going to tell my story. I think several of them would have preferred, you know, that the woman there didn't tell her story. He didn't care. And I've suggested to women the last few years to think about this, to practice telling stories, and be sure their voices are heard telling stories. I think that's important. But I think that women have come a long way. They're in all kinds of public positions and high-level positions, but there's still a certain amount of struggle out there. And certainly justice needs to be done for women.
So we're actually reaching almost the end of our time here. So I wanted to ask you if there was anything that you really wanted to say or cover that we haven't quite talked about yet.
I think about community. I think because my parents were so busy with the government commitments and the wartime and all of that, when I was growing up, that I realized early on that family was really important, and also community. And those have been commitments all my life. And as I've talked about today, I think you can see it played out, including the family reunions and what I'd like to see happen with that and the family communication and all. But I've started various programs. I started the Artist in Residence program in a town in Connecticut, in the public schools and private schools, and felt that my interest in music and interest in community could be developed that way, that it could come together, that I think music brings community together. So I've been involved in starting a lot of projects here and there over the years. I find that quite interesting to get something up and running and then move on to start something else. So my commitment to family community has been really important to me, and my own interests of reading and continuing to learn and give to others and help others has continued to be part of my commitment and who I am. So I taught a course in evolution and spirituality and religion in Cooperstown because I'm linked with the church, the Presbyterian Church here. And there's an action group that's grown out of that now that I'm hoping is going to spread townwide with the other churches. And I find the Great Courses lectures very interesting, so I continue to keep learning even though I'm in my 80s. And encourage others to do the same thing. So there are commitments I've had throughout my life.
Well, thank you very much for sharing all of this with me. I really appreciate you taking the time.